people to forgive him many things. But what about after he died? Eliza left no indication of her reaction upon reading her husband's letters after he was shot. Letters so compromising that her son even scrawled upon one that it should not be published. And amongst those letters are a correspondence with Angelica Church that is flirtatious at best and damning at worst. Though 18th century people wrote to one another in more flowery and effusive ways than we do now, the fact remains that Hamilton's letters to and mentions of his wife's other sisters do not share the same flirtatious tone. To complicate matters, of course, is the fact that Hamilton's own contemporaries appear to have believed that he was sleeping with his wife's sister, a relationship that would have been considered incestuous by the standards of the time. More tellingly, this was believed not only by his enemies, but by his friends. Hamilton's longtime friend, Robert Troup, believed it was a torrid affair, and though there is some confusion about the exact details regarding the incident with the garter, Eliza's sister once taunted Hamilton and Angelica about their flirtation in public. Although we're aware of no direct proof of a rift in the marriage of John Barker Church and Angelica Schuyler, there is circumstantial evidence that the marriage was troubled. To start with, Angelica's letters, flirting with other men, including Thomas Jefferson, implied that she didn't find her husband to be eloquent or interesting. That she was bored in Church's company and that perhaps he was bored in hers. Then there is the matter of Angelica's long visit to America without the company of her husband or children, during which Hamilton paid her expenses, some of which were to be reimbursed by her husband, others of which apparently were not. Ron Chernow, Hamilton's most celebrated biographer, seems to take the position that Hamilton and Angelica had perhaps an emotional, if not physical, affair. But like us, Chernow is befuddled by Eliza's reaction to the open flirtation of her husband and sister. Eliza, who enjoyed a very close and loving bond with her sisters, seems never to have objected to, and quite possibly even encouraged, the flirtation. Was it possible that Eliza knew her husband was having an affair with her sister and didn't mind? Or was it all just a very strange family joke? We cannot know. The only thing we can be sure of is that Eliza, like Hamilton's biographers, would have had to contend with these same letters after his death and make emotional sense of them, which is a process we dramatized for the purposes of this novel, with regards to both Angelica and a speculated relationship with John Lawrence, the case for which is stronger than we presented in the story. For example, we held back a jocular letter from Hamilton to Lawrence that seemed to invite his friend to watch him take his bride's virginity. Ultimately, we noticed a curious 10-year lull in the historical record when it came to Eliza Hamilton's otherwise tireless efforts to see her husband's legacy secured. Between the time of Angelica's death in 1814 and Lafayette's visit in 1824, there is a gap during which the family comes to learn that the Federalists are withholding Hamilton's drafts of Washington's farewell address from Eliza. And yet, she seems to do nothing about it. It's only after Lafayette's visit that Eliza returns to a frenzy of activity on behalf of her dead husband. We theorized that Eliza took these years to process any of the hurts and resentments she'd been suppressing as she reviewed Angelica and Hamilton's correspondence. This also served as a convenient fictional explanation for why one of Hamilton's sons, William, the one born during the Reynolds scandal, abruptly withdrew from West Point, left his family, and wandered to the far end of what was then the country's borders and beyond. Finally, there are the stories and rumors that we left out of the book. Some believe that Hamilton first met Eliza when he visited her father in Albany during the autumn of 1777. But scholars at Schuyler Mansion think it likely that Eliza was visiting the Livingstons at the time. Then there's the more famous story, depicted in a painting, about Catherine Schuyler burning her crops in Saratoga so the British couldn't get them. The story is both suspected to be apocryphal and did not center our heroine, so we left it out. Though we did draft a chapter portraying this scene, one of many that hit the chopping block and that readers can obtain by subscribing to our newsletter. We'd have loved to show Elizabeth Schuyler Hamilton at her husband's funeral, but Hamilton's biographer insists she was not there. We did not belabor the confusion surrounding the duels that took her husband and son. Whether Hamilton fired first, fired at Burr, threw away his shot, or fired as the result of an involuntary spasm or because of the hair triggers in the pistols, remains an unsolved mystery. The same goes for the duel fought by Philip Hamilton. We didn't feel that the debate over these details served the emotional needs of the story, and many other books have been dedicated to answering the questions already. In summary, there is no child or nation that is ever born without leaving scars. We have done our best to be forthright and fair about the injustices and hypocrisies of our founding fathers. We hope the balance struck is one that furthers understanding and creates more interest. For a more detailed explanation of our sources, choices, and changes, visit mydearhamilton.com. This is Cassandra Campbell. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of My Dear Hamilton, a novel of Eliza Schuyler Hamilton by Stephanie Dre and Laura Kamoy. This program was produced by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Executive Producer, Katie Ostroka. Text copyright 2018 by Stephanie Dre and Laura Kamoy. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.